Hello and welcome to today's program of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum here at the club and your host for tonight. Our speaker tonight is Susan Rowan, and let me just read a little bit about Susan for you. Because relationship building is essential to our careers, businesses, and our lives, Susan Rowan returns to the Commonwealth Club to provide her strategies for face-to-face communication in a digital world. Susan was here before when her first book, the classic bestseller, How to Work a Room, was first published. She has since shared her message with audiences worldwide in diverse publications, including the New York Times, Sydney Telegraph, USA Today, Businessweek.com, Yahoo Hot Jobs, O Magazine, Entrepreneur, The Wall Street Journal, and the San Francisco Chronicle. Her clients include Coca-Cola, Chase Bank, Office Depot, the U.S. Navy, Apple Computer, Procter & Gamble, Boeing, the National Football League, and, until now, her personal favorite, Hershey Chocolate. Please join me in welcoming keynote speaker, best-selling author, and San Francisco's own mingling maven, Susan Rowan.
When I first wrote How to Work a Room, they asked me to speak at the Commonwealth Club, and I was enchanted. The venerable Commonwealth Club, I loved it. A room, actually, that had windows, but it was very lovely. And I like to talk to people before my talks, like I did tonight. So I went over. The book had just been out just a couple of months. It was already on Book of the Month Club's bestseller list. It had been in the New York Times. I was not looking 5'11", but I was feeling 5'11". And I went around and talked to everyone. And I spied, not exactly in the last row, but almost in the last row, two gentlemen. And from the looks of them, some of you may have watched the Muppets as I did. Remember the two grumpy old men in the balcony? And I thought they kind of look like these grumpy old men. But I went over nonetheless, put out my hand. I'm Susan Rowan. Thank you for coming. What made you come? And one of them looked at me and said, "We just have one question for you." "Oh, yeah. And what would that be, grumpy old man from the Muppets?" I left that out. He said, "We want to know, how are you going to give a 45-minute talk on a 200-page book?" And then my grandfather must have been channeled by me because he had a great sense of humor. I looked at the two of them and said, "You think that's tough?" I took a 45-minute talk and I turned it into a 200-page book. But that was my beginning, and this I've been here a couple of times. And what I love is the issue of working a room and being face-to-face and building relationship and socializing and connecting has not gotten better. We really now, because of all the technology, need to get better at connecting, which is why you're all here. I mean, being part of the Commonwealth Club, it's not only that there are great programs, there are great people sitting next to you, whom you'll all get to meet because you get to work today. So if I'm going to work the room, so are you. But face-to-face communication has been somewhat diminished. Somewhat. A lot of us are not that comfortable in a room, but I'm going to tell you why. And he's local, but he's an international celebrity. Dr. Philip Zimbardo, who founded the Stanford China's Clinic, and he's here in San Francisco, past president of the American Psychologists Association. He did a study on shyness, and what he found in the 1980s, when I first wrote How to Work a Room, was that at that time, 80% of American adults self-identified as shy. By the time we did what you see here and out there, the third version of How to Work a Room, that statistic went up to about 93%. 93% of American adults self-identify as shy. People that you wouldn't say were shy, they think they're shy. And guess what? If they think they're shy, they are. And they asked Dr. Zimbardo, "What would you consider the reason for this jump?" And he said one word: technology. Technology. We, back then, it was just the emailing, and then it was the chat rooms. But now, how many of you are carrying a cell phone with you? Of course, how many of you turned it off? Oh, that's even better. Good. We're carrying our cell phones. We take pictures with our cell phones. Here's the thing I would love everyone to do when they left here tonight is turn them on and actually call a friend. Nobody uses them to call people anymore. We are so technologically oriented that we're losing some of our face-to-face, and we can't. It doesn't matter what age. It doesn't matter if we're in a business, if we have a career. There's something about being social and connected, and I would say in three areas of our life, if you have social connections, you have better health. All the scientific research, a lot of it done up at UCSF. If you have social groups that you belong to, you have better health. The other thing I found out is, as aggravating as some people could be, would you believe that having connections to friends keeps your brain younger longer? Sometimes I think some of the people I know fry my brain. So this was such an illuminating piece of research, but it's scientific research. And the third part is, for those of us that are working or volunteering, when you have a network, you have a safety net. You have people that you can go to and talk to. What would you recommend? And you have people you can call on. I wrote How to Work a Room because I was giving these programs and people were doing job and career changes. A lot of people don't remember the recession of 1982, but some of us do. The only one thing that I think is different about this one is we have more pundits screaming about it. But 82 is a rough time. People were losing their jobs. There were mergers. There were acquisitions. And I was doing a career change workshop. And I'd say to people, really, doing informational interviews takes a lot of time from people's own work. It'd be better for you to go to the event of a Commonwealth Club event, a chamber event, a Rotary event, the Association of Accountants event, and talk to as many people as possible. And the one woman that, with all due respect, didn't shut her mouth for three nights, said, oh, I couldn't talk to people. It's all you've been doing for three nights. And she said, I can't talk to people that I don't know in a room full of other people. And the reason I wrote How to Work a Room is to help people who really needed to figure out how to talk to people and build their careers get the information they need. So How to Work a Room is really born out of a San Francisco event. And I did a lot of the research here at the Chamber of Commerce. Every time someone would do something, I'd say, what were they thinking? I go, oh, boy, that guy's going in the book. Because, oh, people do some really weird things. And you wonder, could you make this stuff up? I didn't have to make anything up. But it was often the situations that perplex people. But tonight I want to talk about face-to-face because I think face-to-face is so important. The young woman who works for me, we were talking about Craigslist, and she said to me, I am so over Craigslist. Really, you're over Craigslist? I thought you were a real aficionado. She says, well, you know, I just took a seminar, and they said there's something called the hidden job market. Well, I tried to not laugh because guess what? We've been hearing that since 1982. And I said, well, how do they recommend you find out about jobs? And she looked at me sheepishly and said, I think you're going to like this. They said it's through other people that you get to know. No kidding. That's always how it is. The people you know things. But if we don't talk to people, even socially at parties, we miss out on good information. And I'll tell you what else we miss out on. Great gossip. There are a lot of people that say that gossip is bad. They are the most boring characters in the world. I tell you, when anyone talks to me about gossip, I call it, if you look at the research, it's an informal exchange of information. It's how you find out that Joe's, you know, mother passed away and you have to send a sympathy card. It's how you find out that someone's cousin just won a Nobel Peace Prize and you have to congratulate them. If we don't share information, we miss out on things that we need to know. At my health club, I happen to be, now you're not going to believe this, but I was actually in Vegas for business. And I missed out on knowing that one of the gentlemen that I work out with for 7 years that his son passed away. And all I could think of is, did he really think I didn't send a sympathy card? But someone stopped me in the locker room who hadn't seen me and said, did you know? You could call that gossip. I want to reframe that as, that's when you work a room and you have friends and you share information. I'm from the Alice Roosevelt Longworth School. If you have nothing nice to say, sit by me, because I want to hear what you have to say. But what I want to do, we have a handout, and it's about face-to-face in this digital world. And by the way, I'm not here to say you shouldn't be digital. I am an addicted Twitterer. I know. I think I read better and write better because I have to edit. I'm on Facebook. I'm going to tell you how much of my day I waste sitting at the computer. I could probably have written the great American novel for all the time I put in, but it's a way of staying in touch. We need to be digital. I have a neighbor who at 87 bought a computer. She wanted to talk to her great-grandchildren. I love that. I have another friend that I met years ago in the Mideast. She lives in South Africa. At 85, she started to learn how to text because her granddaughter came and visited me. She goes, I can't believe my grandmother doesn't text. I said, she's 82. Give her a break. But at 85, she learned how to text. We need to be digital, but we need to also be offline and face-to-face. The handout, we're going to talk about the remedies, the roadblocks. We're going to talk about some of the ways to get in and out of conversations, and you're going to have a chance to ask me questions. And by the way, How to Work a Room, I am happy to say, celebrated its 21st birthday in November. And I gave it a champagne party because it was an adult. If you think that's funny, when it turned 13, I gave it a book mitzvah. Yeah, the chopped liver at the book mitzvah was really interesting. Because how many books stay on a bookshelf that long? This is the third edition. And my goal is, as a former San Francisco teacher, my goal for you is that after tonight, everywhere you go, first of all, I'll be haunting you and making you talk to people, but that everywhere you go, you're comfortable and you meet people and you have great conversations. Great conversations lead to other great conversations. It's the serendipity that happens just because we're in a room, just because we've showed up. Think of all the people that didn't come tonight. It's their loss because they aren't going to get to meet all of you. So let's start with the roadblocks. The first thing that stops us in these face-to-face situations, whether we're walking into a Commonwealth Club event, a Rotary event, a charity fundraiser, the Leukemia Society, our own family events, is that we were taught like this. Don't talk to strangers. You know, with the hand. Don't talk to strangers. How many of you were taught don't talk to strangers? How many of you have children that you taught don't talk to strangers? How many of you only taught that to your favorite children? No, don't talk to strangers. It makes a lot of sense. There's some neighborhoods in this city and in every city that you don't talk to strangers. But when we go to an event, back in the old days, we were both women entrepreneurs. You walk into a room, you have something in common. So instead of don't talk to strangers, I want to give you the remedy. And you have to write it down because you have to tell everybody so that they can be good minglers too. And the remedy is everywhere you go, before you go there, think of what do I have in common with the people in the room? Well, you're all members of the Commonwealth Club. Well, why'd you join? When did you join? What other programs have you seen? Who is your favorite? You can just write my name on the fill in the blank there. We rarely take the 5 minutes to prepare for where we might be for 2 hours. And it's just thinking of who's going to be there, what do I have in common with them. I never go anywhere with women that I don't have something in common with the women. And I can tell you right now what it is. You think that learning the talk and preparing the talk is one thing. It's getting the frizz out of your hair before the talk. And for people who have straight hair, it's getting their hair curled. And I know the men are thinking, can this be what women really talk about? And I'm here to tell you, you bet. We can talk. There's no time. I go to baseball games alone. I had a friend say to me, you went to a baseball game alone. Who did you talk to? This could only be by someone that's never sat in the bleachers. I said, well, it was a Cub-Giants game, and which I always go to because I'm originally from Chicago, and I figure it doesn't matter who wins, I never lose. So it's a big event for me. And I said, I talked to the guys wearing the Cub hats, and I talked to the people that were, you know, saying the same four-letter words at the Empire that I was saying. We bonded. Because those of you that have been to sporting events, isn't it true you talk to people that you probably would never talk to any other day in your life because you've got that whole team thing going? Because we have something in common. So before we go anywhere, we need to think of what do I have in common with these people? Because if they're not thinking about it, when you do, you're prepared and you're more comfortable. You know, it's kind of interesting to have a microphone taller than I am. I have to admit, I know I'm a little undersized, but that's... Instead of don't talk to strangers, redefine a stranger. Redefine a stranger. What do we have in common with people? But there's a second thing that stops us, and that's that a lot of us were taught that we must mind our manners and wait to be properly introduced. Wouldn't you love to have Kevin introduce you with that great voice everywhere you go, heralding your entry? And if a few trumpets could be played, what a nice addition. But guess what? Everywhere we go, we're on our own. We walk into a room. Sometimes I know people that won't even go somewhere unless they have someone to go with. What a mistake. That means you miss out on so many wonderful programs, movies, plays, ballets, games, events, because someone won't go with you. We can't do that. But we also get stopped because we want to be properly introduced. Am I wrong? You walk into most rooms? Is there someone to introduce you around? Generally not. Here we had a greeting person. There are a lot of places we go and there is no greeting. But I want you to write this down as a hint. If any of you are involved in any organizations and you want to meet the people in the organization, sign up on the greeting committee. When you do that, you will meet everyone that's coming in, and even if you're one of the 93% shy, you will be a wonderful greeter because that's your job. And the benefit is you get to meet everyone. I met you all. We had a wonderful conversation. I just happened to mention, you know, I'm wearing my pink and we're talking about not being able to button things the right way. And I happened to mention a name that Dr. Joyce Brothers, as she got older, because I said, wear pink, it's a little nicer on skin, that she was known to ask for pink light bulbs because it was softer on the skin. And you started a laugh. And I'm going to tell you why. Please introduce yourself.
Linda Brothers.
And not only that, Dr. Joyce Brothers married into one of the arms of her family. Now, who would think that? It's one of those you never know. Give a little bit more. Instead of don't talk to strangers, redefine them. And instead of waiting to be introduced, you, before you go anywhere, this is the Roanne mantra. You think of how you're going to introduce yourself. And I'm going to give you the three factoids. It's not an elevator speech. How many of you heard you must have an elevator speech? Unless you're hanging out in elevators, I don't think you really need one. Here's what you do need. You need a self-introduction that you are comfortable with everywhere you go to someplace, and it's 7 to 9 seconds. It's not a 15-second self-introduction or a 30-second. If you're going to go on about yourself for 15 seconds, you better be in an elevator in what used to be called the Sears Tower, because otherwise that is way too long about yourself, especially if I have a beverage in one hand and a nosh in the other. 15 seconds is too long. 7 to 9 is a pleasantry. I want to show you what it looks like. It looks and sounds like this. Oh, hi, I'm Susan Roanne.
Hi, Susan. I'm Hope Levy.
See? And she's probably going, I'm never sitting on the end with someone that has a wireless mic. I'm Hope Levy. But Hope had a really nice smile on her face, and that made it easy to go over to her. And she responded. People respond in kind. So 7 to 9 seconds. And then there's another aspect of it. You key it to the event. How you introduce yourself here, because we have a wide range, diverse group, may be very different than you introduce yourself at your own neighborhood association, at a fundraiser, your own church or synagogue. Maybe you belong to a Rotary or a golf club. Wait, that's what you hit people with. I mean a golf club. Oh, my goodness. And sometimes we see people that we've known for a gazillion years walk in. Hello. And we greet them. 7 to 9 seconds. Keyed to the event. When I went to a wedding in Chicago, where I'm from, I wanted to demonstrate how I altered my self-introduction. What I did is I went over to someone at this wedding and said, oh, hi, I'm Susan Rowan. I'm the first girlfriend of the father of the groom. Now, that was true, because what do people want to know at a wedding? Who do you know, or do you know the bride or the groom? Now, the interesting thing is the mother of the groom brought her live-in boyfriend, so I think that's why I was imported from San Francisco. But it really started conversations like that. But also, I could have said, I'm Susan Rowan. I'm a local girl made good. I'm a best-selling author. I'm really a fabulous speaker. Yeah, all of which are true. But you know what? They actually didn't care. They just want to know, you know the bride, you know the groom, what brought you here? And what we have to do when we introduce ourselves everywhere is give people a context for our presence. Because why? Over 90% of American adults self-identify as shy. So in that face-to-face, we have to be thoughtful, and we have to extend ourselves because some people are more uncomfortable than we are. People remember the people that make them feel comfortable. I think they equally remember the people that make them feel uncomfortable, maybe even more so. And then the third, if it's about business, the third attribute of that self-introduction is that, and I learned this from Patricia Fripp, who many of you might have heard of, who's a fabulous speaker and speech coach. Instead of giving your title, I'm the vice president, I'm a consultant, I'm a speaker, I'm the CIO, CFO, see who else cares. What you do is you give the benefit of what you do. When you give the benefit of what you do, you allow someone to ask you the next question or the first question, and they think they've started the conversation, and then you're in a dialogue. For example, when I was writing What Do I Say Next, my third book, I wrote it in a coffee house in Marin. I knew what I was doing there every day because I had paper, pencil, and a battery-run sharpener, which, by the way, I only used when they were grinding coffee, so it wouldn't be so annoying. But every day I saw the same guy there. And every day I sat in the same chair. You know, it's kind of like baseball. You wear your red socks until you lose, and then you change socks. But every day I sat in the same chair, and one day someone came in, sat in my chair. I couldn't write. I had to position myself across from him and give him my, having been a teacher, my sixth grade teacher, evil eye. But apparently he didn't get it. He must have skipped sixth grade because he didn't leave. But while I was doing that, I said to one of the guys I saw every day, I said, well, what do you do? And he gave me the perfect benefit statement, self-introduction. He just looked at me deadpan and said, Susan, I help rich people sleep at night. Oh, and this is your shift at the pharmacy? And he looked at me and said, no, I'm a financial planner. How clever. What he did by giving me that benefit of what he did, It made me ask the next question. It was engaging. He threw something out that I could ask something back on, and we were in a conversation. That was 15 years ago. We're still talking. If we give people something that they can hook onto, conversation starts. So give them the benefit. You know, if I talk to realtors, oh, well, I help put roofs over people's head, which I hope will still be the case. How I introduce myself is, oh, hi, I'm Susan Rowan. When I go to events here, I turn people into mingling mavens. And you might want to know what a mingling maven is. And what I would say is, oh, well, I wrote How to Work a Room, and I help people figure out how to do that. But I give someone something so they can ask the next question. Because when they feel they've started the conversation, they're more connected and more engaged. And in this face-to-face space, we have to do everything we can to help people feel comfortable with us. In fact, this is another tip. A lot of people say, what can I do to make myself comfortable in any room? I want you to think about this with a few degrees of difference. Instead of going anywhere, what can I do to make myself comfortable? I would say, what can you do to make other people comfortable with you? When we think about making other people comfortable with us, of all ages, when we do that, the dynamic changes. They get more comfortable, then we get more comfortable, and we're at ease and the conversation flows. Think about making people comfortable with you. And you're going to have a chance to do this. And by the way, we do have a guard at the door, don't we? This isn't recess. So here's what you're going to have a chance to do. You're going to have a chance to meet and practice. And this is where you can't work a room on your tush, is what I wrote in How to Work a Room. You're going to have a chance to meet some of the people in the room. Some of the people you may have seen. I know, don't look at me like that. Yeah, you're going to have to get up and meet some people. Because the reality is you're going to go to other Commonwealth Club events and events, social events, charity events, where meeting people is going to be important. So might as well start here. One of the biggest marketing ploys is something I heard from my grandmother, and I know you heard growing up. It's this. You never know. How many of you heard that growing up? You never know. Why should I do that? You never know who will be there. Well, why should I sign up for that? You never know what you're going to learn. We call that the serendipitous moments. You never know where there'll be a connection, where there'll be a potential friend. So you're going to have a chance to meet people, and we're going to take the risk of getting you up. You're going to have about 5 minutes, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, to meet three people in this room you haven't met, and you're going to get to, don't look at me like that, you're going to get to practice your upbeat, charming, positive self-introduction. So on your mark, get set. Get up and schmooze.
Is there something overlapping?
So being that, you know,
Oh, my goodness. Well, you have really taken to this and met a lot of neat people. Okay, you are great at this. While I'd like to think you came here to hear me, the beauty of this is that you came to meet other interesting people. I have to tell you, these are some of the highest ceilings in any room I've ever spoken in, and in spite of that, you are still one of the most exuberant group. Now, I'm going to need someone to help me get down from here. Oh, that fell off. I am going to make a correction. On the handout, where it says my email, it says .co, and it's supposed to be .com. I must have left off the M. And do you remember that old show, M is for Murder? I guess that's why I left that off. It's on the front page. But if there are any questions that come up after this program, email me. My phone number is there. Yeah, you can get in touch with me. You can go to my website. There's a ton of free material, many articles. I've been a blogger for 5.5 years. Anytime someone does something, I blog about them. But I always like to turn it into, as I am also a former teacher, a little lesson. So you have my information to get a hold of me. I want to ask you, how many of you did meet three people like I said you had to? Fabulous. Anyone meet more? The fast trackers. Very, very, very good. Very good. So you met four people. You were exuberant. Frankly, that's not the right word. You were so noisy. You were having a good time. Because it wasn't just that you were talking. I heard a lot of laughter. How enchanting is that? The studies show, in fact, it was Dr. Marilyn Motes Kennedy, if you want to find out who you could do business with and who your mentor should be, it's about who do we share laughter with. When you share laughter, a bond happens that is unbreakable. So now let me ask those of you who were approached by other people, would you raise your hand if you were approached by other people? How did it feel to be approached? Very good. Anyone else? How did it feel when someone came over to you? Yes.
It felt good. The only disappointment was it was because of my device. I thought it was my good looks that was going to...
But now I'm going to make you show everyone what your device is. He has an iPad. Does that make him the coolest person here? Which I read in the paper, they're now calling iPads. What do they call them? The micro iPods. That's what... It is so cool. He will talk to us later. He's writing a book about that. So, yes. And he thought it was his good looks. But what I like about what he said so with a sense of humor and lightness. There is so much going on that if we can be with people that have a sense of humor about themselves and a lightness, we're all in an interesting economic times. But if we take ourselves so seriously... We are so boring. What we really need to do is lighten up. And when we lighten up, I think we bring lightness into a room. And we are able then to cast the light on other people. So you did meet other people. This is great. I want to know, how else did it feel when someone came over to you? But here's what... A relief. There is... See? Very good. It's a relief. Because why? When someone comes over to you, it relieves you from doing what?
Having to go over to them.
Having to go over to them. So you know what? Let's put this in our brain. When you go over to someone in a room, at a party, at a meeting, at a benefit, that is standing by themselves and might be a little uncomfortable, you are relieving them. You are saying, here's what you're really saying when you go over to someone in the room. You look like someone I ought to meet. You look like someone I should know. You look interesting. You look smart. You look attractive. You look like you might be able to get me medical insurance. I don't know. You know, it shows that you're paying attention. Do you realize what people do in this day and age to get attention? But how nice if someone just gives us the attention in the room and notices us. And so the next time you go anywhere, remember what people said. It felt good when someone came over to them. It felt nice. It feels welcoming. And that's what we need to do everywhere we go. You build friendships. You build bonds. Who knows? Maybe you find yourself a bridge partner. Or maybe a partner to drive over to the bridge. I don't know. We just need to be out there a little and be nice to other people. So now I'm going to ask those of you who did the approaching, the mingling mavens. Would you raise your hand? Those of you who went over to other people. Okay, so tell me, what did they do, besides me telling you you had to, what did they do that made it okay to go over to them?
Oh, well, you made it okay to go over
to them. I made it okay. I always do. But what else did people do that said it's okay to approach me?
They were alone.
You said it.
Smiles.
That gentleman up there was using a flip.
Yes.
My daughter just bought one for me. I haven't got it yet. And I didn't know it was your flip. And I wanted to find out how the things work.
You know what? He noticed it. He saw someone with a flip camera, and he didn't know it was my flip camera, and I asked him to use it. Because you have to have a 19-year-old or a 10-year-old show you how to use it, because I don't know how to use it. But you're going to get a flip. They are fabulous. And it's just even that little gadget started a conversation. But to your credit, here's the thing. We often see people with a flip, with a different kind of iPad or a netbook, and we don't ask the question. And we miss the opportunity of learning something, of getting information. So to your credit, you went right over to him and started talking. So we have to give this man a round of applause for having a little chutzpah there. Very good. Very good. You make it easy. So what else do people do that when you see them in a room, make it okay to go over to them?
Smile.
Say it. Smiled. And I want you to write this down because we forget when we're in rooms to smile. We're so worried. Am I going to meet anyone? I wonder who's here. I wonder what the program's like. We forget to smile. So consequently, we're in a room, and we're worried about everything, and we look like this. And for those in our listening audience, you can imagine the face I just made. Who wants to go over to the person that looks like they got bunion pain? We don't do that. We do not go, oh, look, there's a glowering, glaring, unhappy person I want to meet. We go over to the person who's smiling. What else did people do that made it okay to go over to them?
Eye contact.
Eye contact. Some of you are going to say, oh, my God, I actually came here to listen to that eye contact and smiling. Eye contact and smiling are the keys. We forget to do that. When you give someone eye contact, you give them permission to come over. Back in the old days, oh my gosh, I just said that. We were taught when you had to give a speech and if you were nervous, look over people's faces and look at the back wall. How dumb is that? The truth is you want to connect with your audiences. You want to engage. You want to look at people. After all these years, when I speak, I want to look at the person that is looking, that is smiling, that is shaking their head yes, in agreement. I do not want to look at the person that's the two grumpy old men in the balcony. What do you mean that you could give a speech off of a 200-page book? No, I want to go to the person that makes it easy. Approaching people is one skill, but in the face-to-face world in this digital age, we need to also be approachable. And that makes it easy for people to talk to us. You know, back when the economy was better, people could afford to be, shall we say, standoffish. Who could be standoffish now? We really need to be open and engaging and communicative. And how about this word? Kind. There is something so precious about people who are kind, who notice us. In fact, I'm going to skip all over this handout. when you see people and you're in groups in an event and you're talking to people and you see someone, your peripheral vision that's standing kind of at the outside of your group that wants to get in, if you want to be remembered, you take one step back. And when you do that, you will do as one of the students who heard me speak in San Jose State said, you will reset the circle. And when you reset the circle, you'll have included someone who's been excluded. Will this person remember you? I know we have some job seekers here tonight and some career changers here tonight, but we want to be remembered for the right reason. So do what you did tonight. Now, this is the hex I'm going to put on you. Everywhere you go from now on, whether it's seeing the man with the flip, no, you're going to get one, the guy with the iPod, the woman with the fabulous necklace, everywhere you go, just think that over 90% of the people in that room are going to be really shy, and how kind it will be of you to go over, and you can make small talk, which will lead us to the next page. Small talk. It's schmooze and win. I know a lot of people think that if you ask people a lot of questions, that's making conversation. I'm from Chicago. I'll give you four questions for tradition's sake. You get to the fifth question, and I'm like, what's it to you? I want to know why you're pumping me for information, and you haven't said anything about yourself. Conversation is not just asking questions. And here I say you have to bring your oar wherever you go. Observe, ask, and reveal. The magic is in the mix. Couple observations. Oh, we have really high ceilings in the room with recessed lighting. A question. I wonder how they could ever clean those lights. Revelation. Oh, my gosh, I hope they do soft light on my skin. You know, a little mix. Questions. Observations, revelations. If we only ask questions, we are prying, probing, usually invasive, and we'll almost always ask the wrong question. But now here's the other magic to the schmooze. When someone is giving you an answer, we need to be great listeners. Because when we listen, people actually tell us what they want to talk about. We need to listen. And not just with our ears. We need to listen with our faces. We need to look like we're listening. And really paying attention. Really paying attention. Any questions so far? Yes, sir. Oh, yes. Would you like to come up to the mic? I'll tell you what. No, we can't, but I'll give you. Can I give him this one?
You focused all on being approached. What about if you're approaching a group? You haven't talked about that at all.
Great. How to get into a group. Because you walk into an event and everyone's in a group. I call that in How to Work a Room breaking and entering. How do you get into those? Because you can walk into an event and everyone's in a group and the last thing you do is go, oh, I'm out of here. Here's what you do. When you want to get into a group and you see everyone in groups, the Rowan method, find the noisiest group that's laughing. Make it at least three people, four even better. And what you do is you stand in the periphery of the group. And you do agreeable body language. And if someone looks your way, you say something. And then you can step in. Step in. But find the animated group. Don't find the group that looks like they've been sucking lemons. That's a tough group to get in. And it's very tough to get in when there are two people. Because when there are two people, we think that they're having an intimate conversation. And if it's three and they're having an intimate conversation, I so want to be in that group. That would be most interesting. But that's how you get in. But one of the women, it was in a seminar I gave in New York, said, here's what she did, and it was so brilliant. But she had a charming, kind of her Canadian accent. She was from Canada. Lovely woman, big smile. She would do this. She would see people in the room. She'd pick the most animated group. And she'd go over, and when there was a pause in the conversation, she would say to them with a big smile, do you mind if I join you? Do you mind if I join you? She said, never has anyone said, yeah, by the way, we do. They don't say that. They say, oh, of course. And they'll step back, and then she will step in. Now, for those of you that go somewhere with someone all the time, and we've seen you at events, if you want people to talk to you, stand both of you facing the group. Because if one person in your two-party party has their back, we won't come over to you. We'll think you just want to talk to each other. So if you go with a spouse or a friend to an event, stand facing that group in the room. Make it easy for people to come over to you. Does that make sense? And here's the other thing. When you see a couple or two people where they're facing the group, what they're saying is, come on over and talk to us. What they're really saying, we are so tired of talking to each other. So let's make it easy for people. We don't want to give people a challenge. Those are the. Now that we have cards, I remember speaking in San Francisco, and I asked a gentleman, oh, do you have a card? And he looked at me deadpan, and he said, yes. Okay, do you think I can have one? Many years later, because we are still friends, I said, how come you didn't just give me a card? And here's his answer. You didn't ask for one. Let's not play card games. Yes, sir. I'm going to come over because that's a very good question, and I want this to be heard by the audience.
Because, I guess I don't know if I'm stereotyping, but like Japanese, they're great with cards, you know, part of the introduction. And also what I'm alluding to is when you're, it's a matter of acceptance or not. Like you said, when you're approaching a group, logically, to me, it makes sense because, like you said, if you have a couple going with two or more other people and the other 50%, the other person does not have face-to-face eye contact, it's just like it's a matter of, well, hey, it's a matter of acceptance or not, right?
Well, here's the other roadblock that I didn't say, but it's in the book. There's a fourth roadblock, and that is our fear of rejection. There's our fear of rejection. And, you know, I know people that will jump out of airplanes and go bungee jumping to take a real risk and to give themselves that real thrill. You want a fear? Go into a room full of strangers. We fear rejection. But what you said about it being cultural, it definitely is. And I would say that the one thing we should all learn from Japanese business people, they're very ceremonial about business cards. We in America, hey, have a card. Oh, I think this is networking. Let me give you a card. What are you, dealing Keno? I mean, for goodness sakes, a card in our culture follows a conversation. It does not precede it. But what I love about the Japanese tradition is they present the card. They look at the card. They look at you. And I think we need to be more respectful of people's cards. When someone gives us a card, don't throw it in a pocket. Look at it. And look at them, because this will do another thing. It'll help you remember the person. If you see their card and see them, and then a little while later write a mnemonic device on it, the next time you see them, you might have a better chance of remembering them. But I think there are different customs. Looking people in the eye in some cultures is not, right here in San Francisco, it is not appropriate. I wish I could tell you that I know all of the international, but there's some wonderful books on customs. My goal was to give people what they can to work here. And interestingly enough, this book is in 13 countries, and we just sold, again, Chinese complex rights. So it's been a bestseller in Taiwan and a few other, Germany. Of course, when it was a bestseller in Germany, I remember saying, because all my books, except for face-to-face, have a Yiddish glossary at the end, Nash, Maven, you know, Schmooze, how could you not, Schlepp. And I remember saying to a group, I wonder what they did with the Yiddish glossary. The gentleman was from Germany, came over and said, it's the same language. We don't need the glossary. So, and actually, a lot of the words are. They knew all that. And by the way, when I first wrote How to Work a Room 21 years ago, Maven wasn't an English word, and schmooze wasn't an English word. But I want to define schmooze. Schmooze is easygoing, casual conversation. It's like the small talk. So many people denigrate small talk. Oh, I'm more important than small talk. Oh, I think that's a waste of my time. What I learned when I was writing What Do I Say Next is nobody denigrates small talk who's good at it. So here's what I've learned. And for our listening audiences, the only people that put down small talk are those who are crappy at it. Small talk makes people comfortable. That's where you find out, oh, you like that restaurant? Oh, my gosh, what do you recommend? I was there once. I love the pizza. It's the little things. Oh, you're from Chicago. Anyone here originally from Chicago? You are. Where, from the city?
No, the western suburbs.
The western suburbs, close enough. Those of us from the city always go, You know, if you couldn't have taken an L to Wrigley Field or Marshall Field. But do you see what I just did? You're from Chicago. Where are you from? Western suburbs. Oh, I'm from the city. But there's a conversation. So the next question we might say is, where'd you eat pizza? Because, you know, it's a big Chicago thing. And where'd you buy your hamburgers? And where'd you get your hot dogs? Obviously, we're great gourmet people. So great, you know. But do you see what I did? Bring who you are. Here's another tip. Everywhere you go, you have interesting stories. You have siblings and parents and fun things that are astonishing things that happen at the office. Bring stories with you. Bring who you are to what you do. Bring who you are to what you do. I said I was from Chicago. I said that, you know, I go and the Cubs play. I always win. If someone knows a little bit about you, they can figure out what to say. Maybe it's because they like your iPad or your Flip or your hairdo or Flip. You know, it could have been my hair. Give people something that they can talk about. Like with women, you know, we do jewelry and scarves. But men, I know that tonight's somewhat casual, but men, what you can do to make it easy for people to come over to you is when you go to an event and wear a tie, wear a fun tie. A fun tie. I bought my brother, a diehard Three Stooges fan, and an attorney, a tie. I was in New Orleans. I saw this tie. How could I resist, even if it wasn't his birthday? It were the Three Stooges were on the tie, and it was Mo, Curly, and Larry, and it said, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, attorneys at law. Oh. I bought it for my brother. I said to him, did you ever wear it? Well, he had been the lead attorney for the Water Reclamation Department. He said, yes, I did wear it. I had to go to a meeting, and I needed to be sure that the people in the community felt comfortable to come up and ask me questions. And I wore the tie, because if he said, when you have, he was familiar, he said, if you have the boys hanging around your neck, anyone will come over and talk to you. But what he did was so strategic but so kind. He made it easy for people to come over to him. He made himself approachable. And I think our smile does it, our eye contact, something that we wear, something that we say. And if we're laughing, we're going over in that room to people who are laughing because we want to be part of that group that's laughing. Would you like a tip on remembering names? Would that be helpful?
Oh, yeah.
He almost forgot to tell you that, so there I go. First of all, if you've seen someone before and you don't remember their name, what you do, and I learned this from a gentleman in a talk of mine who had happened, I knew he had to be the vice president of the Harlem Globetrotters because he was 5'4". But he taught me this. He said, everywhere you go, put your hand out and reintroduce yourself and say your name. He said, because if you're struggling with their name, they don't remember who you are. They remember your face, but they won't remember your name. So always reintroduce yourself. And if the person says, oh, yes, I know, and doesn't say their name, you can say, but you know, it's been one of those days. It's been such a busy day and I know you. Could you help me out? Rarely will a person say, actually, I'd like to see you squirm today. But I think it's fair enough to say, it's been one of those days. After I turned 40, this is what I used to say. You know what? Since I turned 40, I can barely remember my own name. It lightens it up. It puts it on you. It doesn't make them uncomfortable, and you'll find that people will help you. But in other cases, there are people that when you say your name, they will just respond in kind and say their name. But here's what we could do to really help our memories. And Dr. Joan Menninger who wrote Total Recall, by the way, before it was a governor's movie, it was a memory book. She said that what we do is we five sense when we meet someone. Kinesthetic, we shake hands, we look at them, we listen to them say their names, and we repeat it so that we're using our own internal, you know, organs and senses. And then what you do, and after you leave the person, is you write a little note on the back of the card to help you remember. But when we are engaged, shaking hands, looking at people, saying their name, listening to them, that helps us remember. There is a lot more, and we are out of time, but I'm going to give you the three main tips. We're going to skip to the next page. The three main tips, the traits of savvy networkers, especially in the face-to-face space, and what we can do if we're building a career and for our people here who are looking for jobs, and I know there are several of them. Savvy networkers, always acknowledge. Thank you, Kevin. You've been terrific. We've been working on this for a couple of months. They always acknowledge. They always thank people for leads, advice, information, ideas. They always thank people. Because I bet a lot of you could name the people that you sent wedding gifts to and didn't send you a thank you note. And are you going to send them a gift for their next wedding? I don't think so. Always acknowledge. The second thing savvy networkers do is they absolutely stay in touch, and here's the magic, write this down, don't forget it, when they need nothing. I put that in The Secrets of Savvy Networking, I repeated it in Face to Face. When you need nothing, it is easier to get in touch with people. I call it, you make hay while the sunshine phone calls, and the hay stands for how are you? How are you? Stay in touch with people when you need nothing. And the third trait of savvy networkers is they have great follow-up. They may not be geniuses, but they have great follow-up. They do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it. It's all in the follow-up. Today, digitally, it's so much easier to stay in touch with people. We've got LinkedIn, and we've got email, and we can stay in touch in myriad ways. There's no excuse not to. Just a little touching base. And you know what? While everyone's doing the digital, how about this? Don't forget, there's nothing as next to seeing someone in person that is connecting as the phone. You can hear people's voices, their intonation, their pause. You can share a laugh. Really beats emoticons. So I think that phone, we need to embrace the phone again and use it for its original intent, which I don't think was maintaining contacts and playing tic-tac-toe, which a lot of people do. I'm going to stay here. We have some questions. Are we out of time? Anyone have a question? I want to thank you. You've been great. You brought your sense of humor. Any questions, please come forward.
Okay, I'd just like to add for the radio audience that we are listening. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is Susan Rowan, How to Work Any Room, and we've learned how to work any room. And we have time for about two more questions.
Okay, great. Any volunteers? Do I have to drag someone up here? Did I cover everything? There might be something I left out that you want to ask.
I have one question. It's sort of based on your outline, which is how do you take that introductory skill that we've learned and move it into something more deep or more enduring?
That's a good question. Conversation, good conversation gets deep, but it starts with that small talk because it sets the tone. What you do is you do it by way of a prepositional phrase. When you're talking to someone, then you can add in a little something that's maybe a little more, I wouldn't say controversial, but thoughtful. And you can see if they pick it up. And maybe it's a great book series. Maybe it's a show that you saw on the Discovery Channel. Maybe it's, what do you think of? Did you hear? And if they don't pick it up, then you move on. But you do it by inserting a prepositional phrase within a sentence. And I think a lot of us are doing that. Someone in a talk I gave said she sees that people are doing that more now to find out what people are thinking politically. And she says, not a big deal, not a big statement, but something little. And you can find out, who has interesting thoughts, who has different thoughts, if you want to go there or do you want to avoid the subject. And that's how you insert it. But I think a lot of people want to have really meaningful conversations, but it doesn't start at an event with a glass in your hand. Really, we have to earn the right to get deep and personal. And relationships happen not overnight, but over time. Yes, I'm going to have you. Well, how about this? I'll come over to you because I have a traveling microphone. All right.
If someone doesn't share your, you have to earn the right to have personal conversations. How do you have any tips for gracefully exiting a conversation?
How many would you like to know how to get rid of those people? All right. Well, we all would like to have James Bond's ejection button on his Aston Martin and just toss him out. Here's what you do. When you're having a conversation, it could be a great conversation. It just could be it's time to move on because there are like 50 other people in the room. If it's a great conversation, what you just do is just interrupt yourself. And you say to them, oh, it was so nice to talk to you about the restaurant around the corner. I just made that up. What you do is you give, again, a little phrase that summarizes what you talk about. It's so nice to meet you. You do shake hands because the handshake signals the conversation's over. But also it's important to watch a person's face. If they're, you know, got pins and needles, as my grandmother used to say, that means it's time to end it. And then what you do is you walk a quarter of the room away. If you say that you're finished with the conversation, you just can't turn your back. You really need to go over to another group or someone else standing alone. Now, what if the conversation was, ugh, and we'll translate that for the listening audience. Maybe they don't need me to do that. What if the conversation wasn't good and it didn't go anywhere? Two things. It could be that person's distracted because they just found out some bad news. The company might be downsizing. The son didn't get the SAT scores they hoped it would. It could have nothing to do with you. So we want to be as polite and nice as possible. When someone hasn't been interesting or fun or responsive, you look like such a good sport. I am so doing this to you. Would you? What you say is, oh, I hope you enjoy the rest of the event. But what you do is you say it in your best. You say it in your best upbeat voice because you don't know what's going through their mind that's distracting, and the next time you see them, everything will be fine. So don't say that to me later tonight. I would really I hope you enjoy the rest of the event. And then you still walk that quarter of a room away to another group or another person standing alone. And while getting into groups is tough, talking to people standing alone is really easier, and it's a kind thing to do. Don't assume that the person standing alone is a snob. Please remember, 90% of American adults are shy. They could be shyer than you. One of the things you could say, what do you think of this? Have you been to this place before? Did you ever see, a martini?